Our Ratings, Ourselves by John Gertner. The Mismeasure of TV. One of the great contradictions of modern American life is that almost everyone watches television, while almost no one agrees anymore about what it really means to watch television. True, we know that as spring gets underway, new episodes of Desperate Housewives and CSI and American Idol will battle for primetime supremacy in the overnight Nielsen ratings. We also know that local broadcast stations around the country will begin scheming just, as they do every April, to win the May sweeps, the tense weeks, when rival stations pursue a fierce one-upmanship of flamboyance and hype, and the Nielsen-measured audience sizes determine future advertising rates. But when it comes to figuring out how many of us are watching these shows, and whether we're paying attention while we're watching, and even whether we're actually noticing the advertisements among the shows we may or may not be watching, well, this is where things get tricky. For the past decade or so, watching television in America has been defined by the families recruited by Nielsen Media Research, who have agreed to have an electronic meter attached to their televisions, or to record in a diary what shows they watch. The setup may not last much longer. Just as programmers and advertisers are clamoring for a better understanding of the television audience, the wave of new consumer products has made it increasingly difficult to satisfy them. One day this January, I sat in a Greenwich Village workroom with Bob Luff, the chief technology officer at Nielsen, as he pulled out gadget after gadget to show me what he's up against. Luff seemed to view the modern American home as a digital zoo, where the lion is about to lie down with the lamb, radio is going on the web, TV is going on cell phones, the web is going on TV, and everything, it seems, is moving to video on demand VOD. And quite possibly the iPod, and the PlayStation Portable. Television and media, Luff said, over the noise of five sets tuned to five different channels, will change more in the next 3 or 5 years than it's changed in the past 50. It is Luff's job to think this way, of course, to observe Americans' embrace of new technologies, and respond with new ways for Nielsen to measure that. It is also the job of a Maryland company called Arbitron, which has counted radio listeners and, at various times, television viewers since the late 1940s. For the past few months, Arbitron has been taking a distinctly unorthodox approach to measuring audiences. Currently, the company is recruiting a couple of thousand volunteers in Houston and asking these randomly chosen men, women, and children to wear a black plastic box that looks like a pager, 3 inches by 2 inches by 1/2 inch, whose circuitry is roughly as complex as that of a cell phone. In the radio and television industry, this little box is known as the portable people meter, or the PPM. In both a business and a cultural sense, it also seems to be the equivalent of a large explosive. The Houston volunteers will clip the PPM to their belts or to any other article of clothing and wear it all their waking hours. Before going to bed, the volunteers will be expected to dock the PPM in a cradle so that overnight it can automatically send its data to a computer center in Maryland, where statisticians can download and review the information. There are still kinks to work out, but ideally the PPM will tell Arbitron exactly what kind and exactly how much television and radio programming a person was exposed to during the day. Eventually, the PPM may also tell the technicians at Arbitron a host of other things too, like whether a PPM wearer heard any web streaming or supermarket music or any electronic media with audible sound that someone might encounter on a typical day. It may not be immediately obvious why this little gadget should matter much to anyone beyond East and West Coast media elites. But one indisputable fact about media measurement is that if you change how you count, funny things happen. Or maybe not so funny. Nielsen's introduction of new electronic television meters in the New York area last winter, for instance, prompted a torrent of criticism from Fox Television, which saw the local ratings and potential revenue of several of its programs suddenly plummet. But this may prove a modest dust up compared with what comes next if devices like the PPM and more data from millions of set-top digital cable boxes reveal that what Americans are seeing and hearing do not correspond to what the big measurement companies have long been claiming. Finding out whether CSI beats Desperate Housewives is just the beginning. Change the way you count, for instance, and you can change where the advertising dollars go, which in turn determines what shows are made and what shows then are renewed. Change the way you count, and potentially you change the comparative value of entire genres, news versus sports, dramas versus comedies, as well as entire demographic segments, young versus old, men versus women, Hispanic versus black. Change the way you count, and you might revalue the worth of sitcom stars, news anchors, and when a single ratings point can mean millions of dollars, the revenue of local affiliates and networks alike. Counting differently can even alter the economics of entire industries, should advertisers thanks to the PPM. Discover that radio or the web is a better way to get people to know their brand, or buy their products, or even vote for their political candidates. Change the way you measure America's culture consumption, in other words, and you change America's culture business. And maybe even the culture itself. The code for all media. Among the bedrock beliefs of the measurement business is the notion that a passive measurement device is more accurate than an active one. This is another way of saying that the more that volunteers have to do to actively chronicle their program choices, like pushing a button or writing something down, the less exact the information about the audience will be. For years, Arbitron's radio ratings and Nielsen's television ratings have depended on selectively recruited Americans who usually get between $2 and $15 to fill out weekly paper diaries in hundreds of local media markets around the country. The diaries are a highly active form of measurement, subject both to frequent errors of recollection. You tend to forget that you stopped on the Weather Channel for 4 minutes while flipping to another program, and to the human tendency to champion personal or habitual favorites. You might write down the Daily Show even if you were out of town that night. A diary can measure only what a person says he watched or heard. It can never reliably measure what everyone actually watched or heard. The distinction matters. It's why, in the late 1980s, Nielsen first began to switch to a new electronic meter, the People Meter, which automatically notes what channel a television set is tuned to, and can also register who watches, as long as each viewer presses a login button. This gave Nielsen, and, in turn, television programmers and advertisers a wealth of new information. Thanks to the company's recruitment techniques, which included interviews and surveys of every prospective household, Nielsen could match the shows each viewer watched to his or her age, income, and ethnicity. In those days, Nielsen's only competitor in the television ratings business was Arbitron, which had already carved out a lucrative niche measuring radio audiences, but was struggling to compete with Nielsen in local TV markets. In fact, by the early 1990s, Arbitron, which also built electronic meters to monitor television sets, was worried that the business was becoming prohibitively expensive. So in early 1992, Arbitron's top executives called in their chief engineer, Ron Colzer, and asked him to come up with an answer to this problem. Could Colzer find a less expensive way to measure television and radio audiences at the same time? Also, could he make the measurements better too? Colzer gathered his staff in an office in the summer of 1992 to toss around ideas and to periodically scribble the good ones down on a whiteboard. In the beginning, of course, the engineers in the room were simply trying to satisfy their bosses to find a cheaper and more efficient way to evaluate Americans' TV and radio habits. The engineers figured they might, if they were lucky, come up with a way to make Arbitron competitive with Nielsen again. But their thinking soon changed. As they worked on their project, Colzer and his team could see that they were trying to understand, and perhaps to shape, the future of media and advertising in America. When Colzer finally made a presentation to Arbitron's executives, he suggested that the company go even further in the direction of passive metering than Nielsen's People Meter. No button pushing, in other words. Until then, companies had been trying to collect data about American television viewers by monitoring the set. We need to monitor the person, Colzer declared. Not long after, Arbitron pulled out of the television ratings business altogether. One bitter, cold morning in January, Coulter met me at the Arbitron offices, a four-story glass panel building. In an undistinguished office park in Columbia, MD, not far from Baltimore Washington International Airport. Coulter's lab is a small suite of rooms overflowing with computer parts and sound meters. He explained to me that it had taken him far longer and more money than he expected, 13 years and $80 million and counting, to actually transform the idea for the PPM into a physical thing. In part, that's because the technology behind the PPM has proved formidably difficult. In the course of his brainstorming in the early 1990s, Coulter and his colleagues came to the conclusion that the best way to capture an individual's media exposure was to bury a unique, repeating, inaudible digital code in the audio tracks of every radio or television channel in the country. The PPM would recognize that code. So Coulter began to work on psychoacoustic masking, which places a signal just beneath the frequency of whatever is being transmitted. As Coulter and his team worked through years of frustration, they discovered that the masked code's frequency could not be too low, where it would run into technical problems, or too high, where it would bother dogs and cats. Nor could it even modestly compromise the audio quality of a show or a song. We used Achy Breaky Heart for a while for our tests, but then I just couldn't take it anymore, Coulter said. So he switched to Don't Give Up, the Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush duet from Gabriel's album South. The song is an intricate work of sonic architecture of some 26 separate tracks, according to Coulter, which made it a challenge for the engineers. Coulter led me into Arbitron Sound Studio to listen to what his team came up with after a decade. He cranked the recording of a Gabriel song through a pair of $20,000 speakers and switched back and forth between coded and uncoded versions. You can tell the difference, he said, more as a statement than a question. I agreed. Arbitron has begun to ask radio and television stations around the country to run their broadcasts through a patented Arbitron encoding device. At the moment, almost all of the radio and television stations that a listener can tune into in the Houston metro area, including over-the-air, cable, and satellite TV, though not satellite radio, are coded for the PPM trial. The stations are not being paid for this. Instead, Arbitron has convinced them, through literal door-to-door salesmanship, that encoded broadcasts will enable Arbitron to measure their audiences better and thereby ultimately boost their advertising sales. To Steve Morris, the CEO of Arbitron, encoding is as much a matter of logic as economics. In Morris's view, code is now the only plausible way to follow a piece of content to see if and how it reaches an individual. Media is following you not just when you consciously turn on your satellite radio in your car, or when you consciously flip open your cell phone and get some cable channel delivered to it. Morris told me it's also coming at you when you walk through Grand Central Station. It's on the floor and on the walls. It's coming at you at the malls, where the LED screens are all around you along with the piped-in music. Advertising is becoming incredibly ubiquitous, so you need measurement that is equally ubiquitous. Can everything with sound be coded? I asked. Yes, Morris said. Will everything with sound be coded? Yes, he said. In all likelihood, the Houston trial will show that people are exposed to far more media and advertising than they think or remember. Some PPM tests in Philadelphia have already indicated that wearers tune into twice as many radio stations on a typical day as they ever note in their diaries. For better or worse, the PPM changes the definition of media consumer. On the downside, there is of course the question of whether people are actually listening to the stations or watching the television channels registered by their PPMs. Arbitron's PPM will never be able to measure how intently a viewer concentrated on a televised Gap ad, but neither does Nielsen's People Meter. On the upside, the PPM could reasonably establish that a person left the room during a commercial break because the coded signal is interrupted when the device is out of earshot. More significant, the PPM expands the boundaries of media consumption. That's because it passively registers media both inside and outside of the home. What PPM volunteers are exposed to in bars, airports, health clubs, and hotel rooms. This is something that has never been done, according to David Poltrack, the head of research at CBS. 10% of viewing is now out of the home, Poltrack said. And for teenagers and young adults, it's often as high as 20%. For a financial news station like CNBC, which probably has a large block of unmeasured viewers watching at work during the day, the PPM could produce a significant boost. Nielsen does not measure offices. Alan Wurzel, the head of research at NBC Universal, told me, nor do they measure vacation homes. They don't measure hotels. They don't measure hospitals. And Arbitron plans for the PPM to do more than establish new standards of measuring television and radio audiences. In Houston, for instance, the PPM will register advertisements that run in theaters before movies. If Arbitron can persuade the entertainment industry to go along, the PPM could also detect the use of everything from DVDs to video games to MP3 music files. Arbitron has a special PPM attachment to track headphone radio and iPods, though iTunes music and podcasts are not yet encoded. In addition, Colzer told me, his bosses recently asked him to experiment with adding global positioning system capability to the PPM so that the company could determine when a person drives by a particular billboard or walks by a particular superstore on a given day. And he has been tinkering with radio frequency identification RFID, so that a PPM could track a reader's interaction with magazines and newspapers. A tiny chip embedded in a page, like this one, perhaps the size of a pencil dot, would tell a PPM that a reader picked up or opened a Times magazine. It might even register with other PPMs whether a majority of readers continued to the end of this article or stopped right here. We've got all sorts of things we're playing with in preparation for a world that is probably a couple years away, Colzer said. But it's going to happen. And it's going to happen because the advertisers are pushing this. It's them. They want to know more. The counting business. One of the most striking aspects of the PPM has nothing to do with the technology. It's the fact that Arbitron and Nielsen are doing business together. If the PPM proves to be good at quantifying the radio and television audiences in Houston this summer, Nielsen and Arbitron together could introduce the PPM into various local markets across the country. In the view of the two former arch rivals, Arbitron brings the PPM's patented technology to the table, and Nielsen brings its knowledge of the television industry and its expertise in recruitment. A few years ago, Steve Morris, Arbitron's CEO, toyed with the idea of using the PPM to challenge Nielsen, but he ultimately decided against it. We looked at this and saw that there's a long history of people taking runs at the incumbent, Morris told me, but there's no halfway here. If we were to go after Nielsen, it would be war, and at the end of the day there would be one person standing. And believe me, there are skeletons littering the trail. How the PPM fits into Nielsen's present television rating system, or how it could change the way Nielsen conducts its business, is a hot topic of speculation in the industry. Over the past decade, Nielsen has maintained its monopoly even as the company itself has changed hands, evolving from the homespun creation of Arthur C. Nielsen and his son, Arthur Jr., to a hugely profitable business that brings in revenues of close to $700 million a year for its parent company, the Dutch media conglomerate VMU. Nielsen clients' networks and independent stations, and also a number of advertising agencies and advertisers, pay the company substantial amounts for a steady stream of viewer data. NBC Universal and Viacom, for instance, probably each pay Nielsen around $50 million a year. In return for a long-term contract, Nielsen will customize viewer data to suit the needs of any client. What a media buying agency, for example, wants to know about a particular program's audience may differ from what a station executive wants to know. The information national networks need isn't the same as what local stations need to attract hometown advertising. For example, In fact, while Nielsen ratings have a knack for anointing the winners and losers in our pop culture, from Ruben and Clay on American Idol all the way back to Johnny Carson and Lucille Ball, Nielsen's role as the arbiter of our cultural democracy happens to be a sideshow. The function of the company is to put a value on time itself, in terms of the commercials that use it. Nielsen's ratings are the single standard, the so-called currency, that allows its clients to characterize a program's audience, its size, age, sex, and economic status, and then set a price. Some $60 billion worth of television advertising looks to Nielsen for guidance each year. The company's ratings are really just another way for people in the TV business to talk about money. According to Nielsen, on a typical weeknight, somewhere between 103 million and 108 million Americans watch primetime television. The average American household now sees 8 hours 1 minute of TV every day, and has access to more than 100 channels, and several different sets often tuned to different channels in different rooms. Industry types call this phenomenon audience fragmentation. The days of a family gathering together on the couch are dying out for good. We're in pieces. Or as Steve Morris, the Arbitron CEO, put it more gently, people are dividing. Every age group, every cultural group, and every demographic group, Morris added, is in the process of getting media packaged expressly for its members. In the next few years, this personalization will become only more and more pronounced. The television industry is in the process of updating its means of distribution by converting to digital signals, a changeover that presents new opportunities for networks to create multiple new lineups and channels, for example ABC, ABC HD, ABC Family, to serve all the new fragments. Within a few years, you should be able to, if you can't already, satisfy any impulse, passion, or modest enthusiasm through your television. Meanwhile, that typical Nielsen family that now has 100 channels to choose from may soon have many hundreds more. Whatever this transition means for TV viewers, it has different implications for advertisers. In recent months, in fact, a host of executives from big corporations, most notably Jim Stengel of Procter & Gamble, have begun publicly demanding that measurement companies like Nielsen and Arbitron provide better information about audiences. These advertisers don't mind talking to smaller groups of Americans. In fact, companies like Fragments. The more specific an audience, the more confident they can be of reaching out to and persuading its constituents. Specifying like this makes it easier to justify advertising expenditures. What we are looking for is not just ratings, but the receptivity to the message, Beth Uyenko, the U.S. Director of Strategic Research at OMD, one of the big media buying agencies, said. To Uyenko, HGTV is an ideal place for home products. For instance, just as Queer Eye for the Straight Guy on Bravo offers a good place for grooming products. Fragmentation can be a challenge, Uyenko added, but if you have a very niche brand, it can be a blessing. Yet to receive that blessing, an advertiser has to understand any fragment of television viewers understand it, that is, in all its mind-numbing, granular detail. Much like a poll that measures the popularity of presidential candidates, Nielsen currently uses representative samples of Americans all ages, incomes, races, regions, to stand in for the enormous audience that watches television each night. It is almost certainly among the most sophisticated companies in the world at figuring out whom to contact for a reliable sample and getting those people to participate. For the moment, many Nielsen families in these samples use the company set-top people meter, which registers viewership regardless of whether a family has cable, satellite, or rabbit ears on their television sets. Nielsen has endured plenty of criticism during the past year over whether it works hard enough to include minorities among its people meter families, charges that are almost certainly unfair. The more legitimate concern is whether Nielsen samples can measure a country and a medium that has become so fragmented. Nielsen's nightly group of national viewers is about 8,000 households in about a year. That will expand to about 10,000 households. In the local New York market, Nielsen's nightly viewers number about 800 households. getting an accurate reading from these Nielsen families on a dominant program like the Super Bowl or the Academy Awards isn't so hard. It's those programs or channels where a slice or a sliver of Americans are tuning in. In other words, how do you draw meaningful conclusions if only a few Nielsen households watch Core TV or the Food Network or Telemundo late one night? What percentage were single African American women older than 49? What percentage were young white men? What percentage were Hispanic teenage girls? The marketers, the people who want to make sure they're reaching the right fragment with the right ad, would love to know. But it's been getting hard to say. And as the number of channels grows, and the number of sets in every home increases, and the number of devices that can carry television signals multiplies, it's going to get even harder. Where the data go? Late last year, the Nielsen company moved into a dazzling corporate campus 20 minutes northwest of Tampa in Oldsmar, Florida, a place that seems less like a town than a hasty arrangement of strip malls, office parks, and juvenile palm trees set between the Tampa Bay Downs racetrack at one end of town and a dense patch of swampland on the other. The Nielsen Media Research Global Technology and Information Center, as it's called, is an impressive pile of glass next to the swamp. Nielsen spent $123 million in Oldsmar on three interconnected buildings, which is far less interesting than the way they constructed them, with redundant electrical circuitry, high security barriers, and warning bells on top of warning bells. The point was to create a fortress so that no computer virus or sparking wire would compromise its rating system. Ditto for any possible competitor. This particular part of the campus is capable of withstanding winds of over 150 miles per hour, Alan Donnelly, who runs day-to-day operations in the main data building, told me in February as we walked through the computer room. It's built to sustain a Category 5 hurricane. There were also fuel tanks and backup generators on the ground floor, Donnelly pointed out, that could power things for several days just in case. Donnelly took me through a security door and into the main control center. It is a strange and somewhat disorienting experience to observe the Nielsen process at work, to watch the people who watch America watching television. Nielsen still measures a large number of regional markets with written diaries. But the data from the 8,000 home National People Meter panel are tabulated in the Oldsmar Control Center, where a half dozen employees face a 22-foot widescreen that can tune into any channel in the country at any time. The process is similar to what will happen soon with the PPM in Houston, except the scale and the implications will be exponentially larger. At night, while Nielsen families around the country sleep, the data from the people meters on their televisions are sent here automatically over telephone lines. Beginning at about 3 a.m. the technicians in Oldsmar collect the details about the shows the Nielsen families watched. They check it, they slice and dice it by demographics and geography and any criteria their clients would like. By late morning, they publish their list of the top shows for television executives in New York and L.A. Fragmentation isn't Nielsen's only headache in all this. As its recent battles with Fox and New York show, putting new technology into old markets stirs up an industry that abhors any kind of volatility. We're being simultaneously told to speed up the change to electronic measurement and to slow down, Susan Whiting, Nielsen CEO, told me. There's certainly some truth to this. And yet in the course of my interviewing nearly a dozen advertising and television executives, almost all of them faulted Nielsen for languor rather than aggression. Virtually every network and cable company I spoke with voiced frustration with Nielsen's tardiness in measuring time shifting, which happens when viewers rely on video on demand or DVO-like devices, also known as digital video recorders or DVRs, to shift the times at which they watch their chosen programs. If a Nielsen family watches Dateline from its DVR 3 days after its broadcast, in other words, those viewers aren't counted and NBC gets no credit. Which may seem like a minor thing, except 6.5 million Americans already have these devices, according to Forrester Research, and 17 million might have them by the end of next year. Nielsen has announced that it intends to track time shifting starting next January, supplementing the people meter with the active/passive meter, which uses sound encoding much like what Arbitron uses for the PPM. Each company has patented its own version. Next year, primetime shows will receive 3 national scores. Dateline, say, would get a rating for viewers who watch it during its normal time slot, a second rating that includes viewers who see it later the same evening, and a third rating of total viewers over the course of a week. Nielsen is no slouch when it comes to technology. Its problem seems to come from implementing that technology in timely fashion. One advertising side media executive, asking that I not name the firm because it frequently negotiates with Nielsen, put it this way: they're very good at stifling innovation and managing the environment. They slow the pace of change down. And they're very good at making sure that their monopoly will continue. In this regard, some players in the television industry fear that Nielsen has agreed to support the PPM only because it allows the company to slow down or squelch its acceptance. Susan Whiting told me that the issues are wholly technical and that she won't be able to know whether Nielsen can proceed with a joint venture with Arbitron until the PPM Houston test shows results that Nielsen feels comfortable with. In the meantime, Nielsen continues to pursue other alternatives. One morning in Oldsmar, Bob Luff, the company's chief technology officer, led me through a tour of a different possible future for measurement, one with voice recognition and face recognition meters that the company is testing along with other devices. Luff then took me into his engineering department, a matrix of cubicles, where a small army of Nielsen technicians take apart the newest televisions on the market so that the company understands the circuitry well enough to attach a people meter in the event that a prospective Nielsen family has a new model in its house. The Nielsen offices in Florida actually have storerooms full of brand new TVs and DVRs and video game consoles for no other purpose than research and deconstruction. Luff and I pause by a desk where one of his engineers had pulled the bowels out of a huge new flat-screen television. "He'll reverse-engineer this," Luff explained to me, "and he'll figure out where we can connect. He might also take close-up digital photographs for the field technician to use on his laptop." Nielsen, Luff added, has blueprints and plans of some 10,000 televisions on file. You have to wonder if this is a losing battle, whether keeping up with the technology curve has perhaps left Nielsen with little time or inclination to get ahead of it. There is, moreover, an aroma of sweaty exertion to the Nielsen process. And that comes not just from the ripping apart of new televisions. The company also puts prodigious efforts and tens of millions of dollars a year into maintaining its representative sample of Americans. Hundreds of field reps knock on hundreds of doors every month to invite them into the Nielsen sample. Then those same reps monitor the volunteer households, which entails maintaining intimate, day-to-day oversight, often for several years, to ensure each Nielsen family complies with its rules and pushes the correct buttons on the people meters. Whether this can continue depends, in large part, on economics. The more America fragments, the bigger the sample you need to represent the country. And the bigger the sample you need to represent America, the harder and more expensive it is to maintain in a door-to-door, labor-intensive manner like this. "I wouldn't predict that Nielsen is going out of business," said Richard Fielding, the head of research at Starcom Media Worldwide, one of the big media buying agencies. "But they are at a crossroads. And it's almost as if their business model is evaporating overnight. You are what your cable box says you are." At some moments, trying to discern the business of companies like Nielsen and Arbitron gives way to the question of whether America is becoming weightless, an agglomeration of data about who we are and how we behave that seems to have more substance and certainly more financial value than our actual selves. It was hard to avoid this thoughtily one evening last winter, as I drove over the Sunshine Skyway Bridge over Tampa Bay toward Bradenton, about 60 miles south of Nielsen's Global Technology Center, on my way to Aaron Media. Several years ago, a few computer geeks and new economy types started this company in pursuit of something no measurement company has yet pulled off, tapping into cable setup data to get a complete picture, not a sample, of what viewers in a particular city or region are tuned into at any second of any day. Though known to media planners and many broadcast and cable executives, Aaron Media does not seek attention in a business sense. It's pretty much off the grid. When I turned into its nearly vacant parking lot, fronting a mostly empty office building set amid empty fields and dark stretches of forest along Route 301, the company seemed to exist not only on the edge of Bradenton, but on the very edge of reality. Aaron Media has no people meters, no PPMs, no gadgets, no embedded codes. A few dozen employees, a couple of computer servers, and a number of patents pending in Washington, that's all. The business is less a conventional company than a pure expression of mathematics. Digital cable set-top boxes are already connected to sets in the homes of 25 million Americans, a number expected to nearly double by 2010. When you get your television signal through one, you receive programs or downstream data from your cable company. But the cable companies can also get a transmission back from you. They can find out what you watch. And they can also find out when you watch it. Federal privacy laws and various technological challenges, especially with older, analog set-top boxes, have made the cable companies reluctant to use that information so far. But some third parties have tried to come in and calculate, through some very complicated software applications, whether viewer information can be tabulated while still protecting privacy. We figured out how to get the data and how to figure it out demographically without knowing who you are, Frank Foster, the president of Aaron Media, said, as we sat down in a conference room in the company's office building. Foster maintained that his company can offer its clients, cable operators, television stations and media buyers, a detailed breakdown of regional television audience at any given time. If a city's digital cable company allows Aaron Media access to its data, in other words, Aaron Media could deconstruct the audience for any show, Foster said. He could tell a producer that 44,312 sets were tuned to the first 4 minutes 7 seconds of the local news. Or that 11,812 cable households surf channels during the commercial break in the NCAA semifinals. He could track the viewers as they tuned in and out and precisely where they came from and where they turned to. A few weeks after 9/11, Aaron Media tested some data from Comcast to see what its television audience did that day, and in the weeks afterward, compared with viewing patterns in the weeks before. The company charted precisely how many households tuned in, and when. It found out what caught viewers' eyes. Foster was sitting across the table from Frank Maggio, the company chairman. When Maggio chimed in, he pointed out that a second-by-second census of actual viewers might even do more than what Foster described. It could tell the producer of a local news show that the audience preferred the sportscaster on a competing channel, and Aaron Media could prove it by showing how many viewers switched channels at the relevant time. Perhaps most important, Aaron Media could use set-top data to register small numbers. The chief of a future microchannel, in other words, could tell advertisers exactly who is in its tiny but enthusiastic audience. If only 300 households tuned in out of 300,000, they would still be counted. And if an advertiser suddenly wanted to show an ad for Wolf Stoves or Volkswagen Passat specifically tailored to those 300 homes and be assured that day is coming soon, it would be able to. Aaron Media, both men said, could give a programmer or cable company a detailed picture of an audience within 24 hours. Maggio, a young entrepreneur, says he firmly believes that Nielsen is the relic of a simpler time, an era of three networks, and a less diverse America. He ascribes no bad intentions to the company. But he relishes the potential for an outfit, like Aaron Media, to destroy it. I believe I could go into Nielsen and quadruple their profits, he told me. It's so much more efficient to use our technology. Then Maggio said, he was willing to keep his company going as long as necessary with millions of dollars from his real estate projects. We can pick up where Nielsen leaves off, but we can do more than that, he He said the implication being that Heron Media could not only give cable operators, stations, and advertisers detailed insights into their audience, but even, under the right circumstances, also help establish a new ratings currency in place of Nielsen's old one. To many people in the industry, this would seem preposterous. But Maggio had a counter. "I'm kind of brash," he said. After a short pause, he shrugged. "Actually, I'm a maverick. To be sure, Nielsen has already seen the light on setup data, even as it publicly defends the aging technology of its people meters and the methodology of its samples. In fact, both Nielsen and Nielsen's biggest global competitor, a European company called TNS, have been in discussions for some time with various U.S. cable operators about using set-top information. It may eventually come down to what the cable operators decide is in their best interests. They're the ones with the data, our data, which is tantamount to saying that they're the ones sitting over the diamond mine. It's a fairly simple process to take set-top boxes and capture anonymous viewing information," Steve Burke, the chief operating officer of Comcast, the country's largest cable system, told me, "but it's not what we do. If you're a cable company, you don't get up in the morning and think, how can I create a competitor to Nielsen? You get up and think, we'd like to get VOD rated and grow our business, and wonder when Nielsen is going to hurry up and get off the dime." Nevertheless, Burke admitted, it wouldn't take much at this point for those on the cable side to force a drastic change. The obvious consortium would be you get some cable companies, a satellite company, and a couple big advertisers together to start a Nielsen competitor, Burke mused. I asked him if they were near to doing that yet. He let out a frustrated laugh. "We are getting closer," he replied. Whether a cable consortium ends up choosing a partner, like Heron Media, or whether cable companies get together and then choose an established partner, like Nielsen, probably matters less than the net effect of changing the way viewers get counted. When the music industry's charts switched from surveys to actual sales data in 1991, they shook up long-standing assumptions. Country and rap were more popular than realized, for example. And to be sure, a change like that can't happen overnight. Any new way of counting, put suddenly into effect, would wreak havoc on TV industry finances by elevating the value of airtime on some shows and deflating others, thus forcing stations and networks to offer advertisers make good ads when audience sizes don't meet their expectations. When Nielsen introduced people meters in the New York region, for instance, the size of the audience for The Simpsons on Fox turned out to be 30% smaller, while Comedy Central's audience increased by 225%. Frank Maggio at Heron Media makes a persuasive case that the set-top data is bound to come into play sooner or later, even if it turns things upside down in the process. "What America is paying for advertising now," Maggio said, "is based upon people who are going to come into your house and take apart your TV. As Maggio sees it, ratings have to come as close to the full truth as technology allows, and the fact that Nielsen uses samples to represent him is," he said, "infuriating. Of course, such fury happens to suit his company's best interests." Maggio clearly seemed to understand that in making his point, he had located Nielsen's sore spot. "It's the American way," he said, comparing their use of set-top data with Nielsen's methods. "We only accept elections that represent all our votes. Why is this different? We don't have to do it Nielsen's way anymore. And we really shouldn't do it that way anymore. All about the advertising." In the view of television executives like David Poltrack, the head of research at CBS, there is no one-size-fits-all way to get true ratings. The PPM, for instance, is portable enough to capture any television that can be heard in an increasingly portable world, but it still relies on a representative sample of Americans to wear it. And while set-top data can give nearly complete insights into what the vast number of household televisions are tuned to, it cannot capture media outside the home, or even data from households that lack set-top boxes, and it cannot yet register whether it's the grandmother, or the young mom, or both in front of the television. I believe that the PPM is a part of the measurement system of the future, Poltrack told me one day in his office at CBS, but it isn't necessarily the entire measurement system of the future. I can envision a system where you've got one database of hundreds of thousands or even millions of homes with set-top boxes feeding information into a measurement system. You also have these people carrying PPMs, feeding information into that measurement system. And you may have a traditional Nielsen household sample feeding information, too. As Poltrack sees it, the end result would be a rating system that comes razor close to reflecting what the country now actually watches. It would also, in effect, be a mass cultural election, every day and night. I discovered that Poltrack's vision seems to be a fairly popular one in the industry, regardless of which side you're on, advertising, programming or measurement. I go to bed at night feeling very good, said David Kirkland, the CEO of Carat Americas, one of the biggest media buying agencies. I feel the world is coming our way. The world of digital television, the PPM, the set-top box will give us the data we want. The worlds that executives like Poltrack and Kirkland ultimately want, however, are quite divergent. Both desire better ratings. But Kirkland wants them for more than just television. His clients, the companies that pay for ads, want to know everything about how we use every medium. They don't think of television as the future. Programs are the future. Joseph Darrow, a professor at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania, who's probably the reigning academic expert on media fragmentation, takes a similar view. Television has to be thought of not as a box anymore, but as a social role, and I think that advertisers have begun to see it that way, he explained. Darrow said, he now sees little difference between television and the internet. Nor do his students at Penn. They watch the OC wherever and whenever on their laptops, at home on TiVo, and by swapping the show perhaps illegally through a web-based file-sharing program called BitTorrent. The coming generation is accustomed to the idea of watching or listening to anything on any device that's nearby, Darrow said. In the meantime, his generation, he's in his 50s, still thinks of media in these compartmentalized ways. The PPM, of course, ignores those compartments. The end listing Kering at Arbitron is creating something to measure any piece of media, whatever form it takes. That's what Carat's Kirkland wants. But that's not all he wants. People in Kirkland's camp don't necessarily spend their days worrying about who is watching what. They worry about who is watching their clients' commercials, especially now that fast-forwarding or clicking past them is so easy. So for Kirkland, the evolution in measurement can't stop with improved ratings. The next step, and the more lofty ambition, is to measure advertising's impact. There is a dream within the accounting industry that has been around for decades, called single-source measurement, but it has never been successfully realized. Recently, thanks to the PPM, this goal has been resurrected under the name Project Apollo, which is a joint effort between Arbitron and VNU Nielsen's parent company. Apollo is basically something that's been a holy grail of measurement since people were drawing woolly mammoths on the side of caves, David Kirkland said. It's a closed-loop system that will measure the media people absorb and then what they buy. To this end, Apollo will track 70,000 people across the country who wear the PPM all day. But not for the sake of ratings. The advertisements and messages these 70,000 people see, hear, read, and counter will be matched to the purchases they make. You could say it's a massive scientific trial of cause marketing and effect buying. Or you could say with some trepidation that it's about creating a more perfect, more efficient consumer society. Linda Dupre, who is in charge of Apollo at Arbitron, put it to me this way: for those who have worked in advertising a long time, we think advertising works, we just don't know how. Apollo, the name came from someone in the project enamored of the history of early NASA launchings, should settle that. At the moment, representatives of Arbitron and VNU are making presentations around the country to encourage big companies to sign up for the service, which should be available sometime next year. The price is high, up to $1 million per company, and many businesses are reluctant to invest in an untested product. also Arbitron and VM. You are trying to stress the practical appeal. Apollo should allow companies to understand which advertisements get consumers to buy their products, but could also offer insights into the connection between their tactical approach to advertising and the urge to buy. Moreover, Apollo could give advertisers a clearer understanding of whether radio, TV, or even the web, the internet usage of those 70,000 people will be monitored, gives them the best rate of return on their ad dollars. For instance, if Apollo demonstrates that advertisements for Lemonade have a higher success rate on radio than television, that is, the radio advertisements seem more successful at getting Apollo volunteers to buy the Lemonade, it would help companies figure out how to reallocate their marketing dollars. So far, only Procter & Gamble has made a public commitment. But many people in the measurement industry told me they regard the ultimate success of Apollo, or some variation of Apollo, as inevitable. What we are talking about with using the PPM4 ratings is a significant change along a fairly predictable continuum, going back 10 or 20 years. Steve Morris, Arbitron CEO, told me you want to talk about something that's discontinuous. Apollo is discontinuous. That will change the way people think about how we buy. Not right away. It will take time. But I believe that it will. Since Morris's company would benefit from the success of Apollo with a PPM as an essential element in the project, he has good reason to talk up its potential. Still, Morris, a soft-spoken and studious man, is hardly the sweet-talking salesman, and I found his logic airtight. Discontinuous, disruptive things do come along, Morris said, and you don't have a choice whether you follow them or not. They're driven by need. I think, if you talk to advertisers, Apollo is exactly what they want. And the advertiser is the top of our food chain. So if that's something they want, and the technology will allow us to produce it, then you have to assume that's going to be a big part of the future. What Morris couldn't say, indeed, what all of the advertisers, measurers, and programmers couldn't say, is what this means for the other parts of the food chain. Marketers often make the point that the consumer is king. One consultant for Procter & Gamble told me that that company's chairman, A.G. Laffley, never hesitates to say that the consumer, and only the consumer, is in charge. Apollo and all the other measurement services might give credence to that contention. Corporations that are serious about selling products to a fragmented nation barraged by media messages will come to us for a deeper kind of understanding and approval. You could, however, see Apollo, along with the PPM and encoded signals and set-top data, as a stealthy realignment in the marketplace. What we did in the evenings, what we bought, what we desired wasn't that always a riddle to be guessed at by advertisers and programmers. The window shopper, the TV watcher, the radio listener, the web surfer, we were all so unpredictable, so capricious, and terribly human. We were working because we were somehow mysterious. Who will wear the crown now?